Bandwidth for this podcast is brought to you by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com. This is We Have Communicators, episode 141, recorded on October 19th, 2011. Enjoy! All right, it's time for We Have Communicators, the show that covers all things iOS and beyond. I'm Michael Johnston, and with me, as usual, is Mr. Jeff Gamet from the Mac Observer. Hey, Jeff, how's it going?
It's going so fracking fine.
Awesome.
Oh, yeah. And you? How are you?
I'm freaking great. So you're saying fracking, I'm saying frickin'. We're keeping out of the explicit zone right now.
If you want to jump across that barrier, I can fix that right now.
No, it's all right. I think we'll let it happen organically, and then I'll say that I'm going to beep it, and
that
then we'll see what happens.
I've had so many dates that went just that way.
Adam is not here this week. He's off at Expression Engine Conference.
Because that man knows how to party.
He does, with the PHPs and the jQueries and the Ajaxes of the world. Those are people, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
They have, like, grills, lots of bling.
Oh, man. I think there is a rapper named Ajax, isn't there? There's got to be. I sound like the whitest person in the world. He's probably very prevalent.
Probably. And I'm certain he's also an avid fan of We Have Communicators, and you've just offended him personally.
And I just,
which means you better watch out because he's going to cap your ass.
Yeah, well, now he knows because I just typed Ajax the rapper into Google and solidified my whiteness.
Yeah.
Okay. So, on to iOS stuff. iOS 5 is first thing on our list of things to talk about. So, last week when we talked about iOS 5, it had just come out that day, correct?
Was I drinking? Because I really don't remember us talking about iOS 5.
I think we did talk about iOS 5. We had the conversation with Adam about the music app on the iPad and how much I didn't like it.
Oh, right. And that was also the episode where Adam was so completely lost about something we were doing. And I told him he looked pretty.
Yeah. And then I realized I wasn't recording. And then you told me the same thing.
Yes, I did. But, and so whoever was listening and loved that comment, you're welcome.
I think that was everybody.
Yeah. Well, someone actually tweeted to me and I'm sorry, I can't remember who it was.
But, okay. Yeah. So iOS 5 has been out for a little over a week.
Right.
I've been using it on my iPad. I have not been using it on my iPhone because I like to jailbreak. There is a jailbreak right now for those who like to do that. It's available for all but the iPhone 4S and the iPad 2. However, it is a tethered jailbreak. So... honestly, the only time I've ever done a tethered jailbreak is on an iPad, and that's simply because I know it's not going to be a horrible, horrible mess if for some reason I have to reboot my iPad and it won't work until I get back to a computer.
That would really suck.
I would recommend unless you have a spare iPhone, don't do a tethered jailbreak on your phone. But Jeff, have you found, I'm sure you found many things in iOS 5 that you enjoy, or do you have some things that you want to talk about? One of the things that I really enjoy and have been using recently on my iPad is the mirroring to the Apple TV.
Oh, see, I just need to go and get one of the new Apple TVs because I have the old
one. You don't have a new Apple TV?
No, I don't. And you know why? I'll tell you why. Here's why. I don't have one because I really like being able to push content off to the Apple TV so that if my computer is asleep or not around, like if someone's coming over to take care of my place while I'm gone, they have stuff they can watch.
Oh.
So, yeah. So I can't do the AirPlay mirroring. But, you know, I'm thinking about getting one of the new Apple TVs just so I can do that.
Yeah, you should really get on it. It's fantastic. Generally, what I've been doing so far is just scrolling through Tumblr and putting it up on the TV because at some point there are too many people to gather around the iPad and look at the funny things on Tumblr. But that's usually what I do with it so far.
You know, I'm pretty sure that's why the whole television industry has evolved the way it is. So we have big screen TVs so that everyone can sit around your couch and look at Tumblr.
Yeah. It's a wonderful world I live in.
Yeah.
So you get Safari, you got tabs. I love the tabs. I think I mentioned that. Reader is pretty cool. I have not been using the reading list because I use Instapaper. And I don't have, I don't use the new Safari on my Mac, so it wouldn't really sync well. I don't think there's any way to access it outside of Safari.
I don't think there is. And, you know, I am so not a Safari guy. And I'm sure comes as a big shock to everyone.
I think you've talked about it before.
Yeah. And the tab thing in Safari, mobile Safari, I'm all meh about that. Horizontal tabbing just does not work for me. It's just so inefficient. But there you go.
I mean, would you say that at least it's better than it was?
Actually, no. I preferred the thumbnails.
Wow.
Because on the smaller screen, iPhone or iPad, it's just so much easier for me to figure out which web pages I have open by being able to do that quick visual thing.
Well, now, it's only tabbed on the iPad, not on the iPhone.
Right. So I would like to be able to do the thumbnails on the iPad just as I do on the iPhone.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that everyone's probably thinking that I've been dropped on my head, which is true, but that's not the reason why I don't like the whole tab thing. It just really doesn't work for me.
Now, one of the things that I really enjoy about iOS 5, if you go into general under usage, previously, I believe it would tell you stuff about your data and maybe just a really brief, here's how much space you're using. I'm going to try to bring it up on my iPhone. Yeah. Battery percentage. Actually, didn't even tell you how much space you were using at all. So now, if you go in there, you can see total used and total available, and then a breakdown by application. So you can see how much music you have, how much data is being used up by each individual application. This is cool.
It's very cool. You know, by coincidence, we're talking about this today. And this morning, what is today, Wednesday? So this morning, Melissa Holt, who writes for me at Mac Observer, she had a tip about this very thing.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. And so she talked about the whole iCloud thing, how you can manage the apps that get backed up to iCloud if you're doing that.
Uh-huh.
So anyhow, there's a tip there if people want to go check it out.
What is the tip? Or is it too hard to explain?
Well, the tip just goes into all the stuff that we're talking about right now. It talks about managing apps for backup through iCloud. And there you go.
Well, anyway, if you go into usage, you see the breakdown. Now, for applications that have data that's being used up, you can, so if you go to, it says documents and data for various things, you can see how much each application is taking up in terms of what the app is taking up. And you can also delete, you can clear out the data for certain applications. You know, if it's all applications or just certain applications that you can clear out.
I think it's certain applications, because every application that I've gone in to look at from the usage view,
it just says documents and data.
It shows me documents and data and gives me the option to delete the app.
Right.
Not app data.
Yeah. Yeah, it seems like only just the music application allows you to delete. So music, video is another option. I'm sure photos is in here somewhere, and you can probably delete photo data.
Yeah. Oh, and if you have podcasts, they show up under music.
Yeah, that would make sense. Yeah, well, that's pretty cool. Wi-Fi sync, we talked about that last week.
I do love Wi-Fi sync.
And it loves you.
It does, I know. It sent me a note. It was really cute.
iCloud, of course, you can back up to the iCloud. And I think you can maybe manage your data a little bit better there in terms of what's being stored on iCloud.
Sure, but having some control on your iPhone or iPad, that's pretty cool.
Mm-hmm. Here's an interesting tip. You know the shutter? You can use the volume up button to take a picture.
Right.
And I believe that works on the iPad too, right?
Probably, but...
Why would you take a picture on your iPad?
Why? Yeah, why? Yeah.
Now, it does work on the iPad. Now, here's the really cool thing. So, if you want, you plug in a pair of headphones with a volume control, such as the ones that come with your iPhone, and you can actually use the up volume control on your headphones to take the photo, too. So, it's a little wired remote.
That's actually really cool.
That is very cool. So when I was down in Florida checking out the last two shuttle flights, when I borrowed a camera from a buddy, he let me borrow a wired remote. And that was the first time I worked with a wired remote. And after I used it, I realized this is probably the only way I would have gotten any shots of any use at all. Because if you're touching it at that kind of focal length, you're going to get a little bit of shake in there. So having the ability to use a wired remote on your iPhone can be useful. And there are a lot of cool things you can do with your phone, like getting the GorillaPod mobile, for example, having a little tripod for it and actually using right. That'd be pretty cool.
All right. So that's cool enough that I think I'm actually going to grab one of my headsets that has a microphone on it and just throw it in my bag.
Cool.
Just so I can have it as a remote.
Yeah, why not?
That's really cool.
Now, Newsstand. I have not really used Newsstand at all.
I can't use Newsstand, and I don't know why. I haven't figured it out yet.
Because does the little store button not light up for you?
It stays gray all the time.
Yeah, me too.
And I have three magazines that automatically loaded in there. But I can't get at the store.
Okay, you can't get... I think the store is just basically it's the app store.
Yeah, but you should be able to tap the store button in Newsstand.
Yeah.
And get the app store to come up.
It's strange that... I think I have that too. But now basically... So can you... So now whenever you get something that is a publication in the app store, those go into that folder, right?
Yes.
And you can't pull them out?
I don't think you can.
Can you try pulling it out? Because that's be very interesting for this next thing that I want to mention.
I just want to point out that I have the mind of a 12-year-old, and I didn't make the joke right there.
Good.
No, you can't pull the magazines out. It just starts scrolling the shelves instead.
Okay. Yeah, I'm downloading one right now. Okay, so here's the tip. Shoot, I don't know what I just downloaded. Better Homes and Gardens. Okay, let me search for it. Okay, yeah, you can open that from the spotlight. Okay, so my tip, for those of you who don't want the Newsstand icon, and you can't put it in a folder, because it is a folder.
Yeah, you can. There's a hack, kind of trick hack thing. Don't do it.
No, do it.
No, don't do it.
Why not do it? Tell me why.
Because if you're actually using Newsstand and you do the little trick to get the Newsstand folder thing to go into another folder and then try and launch Newsstand, it will crash and it will obliterate all kinds of data off of your iOS device.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
It hasn't obliterated any data off of my iOS device.
Well, keep in mind, it's kind of a hack that you're doing.
Okay, so here's the hack, and play with this as you want. Basically, you take an application, and you drop it on top of another application, as you do to make a folder. And while as the animation is happening, where the app creates a folder and it's dropping in and all that, as soon as you drop it down, you want to go grab the Newsstand icon as well. So you have to have all these three icons on the same page, the Newsstand and the two apps you're using to create this folder. So grab Newsstand and drop it in there as the and well, just grab it as that animation is happening. And once the animation happens and the folder is open and icons are wiggling, you can just drop Newsstand in there. And then, as Jeff says, if you try to actually open a folder within a folder, you end up in limbo and Springboard crashes.
Right. And there's a lot of people saying that when Springboard crashes from launching Newsstand, that they lose a lot of data. So use this hack knowing that.
Yeah, I have not lost any data as far as I can tell.
Okay, and considering it's a hack,
about it.
It wouldn't surprise me that some people are able to use the app without any problem and other people are having nothing but headaches.
It's a very slight hack.
It's a very slight hack with potentially serious ramifications.
Yeah. So if you do actually use Newsstand, now, you, as I've just verified, you can access items that are in Newsstand by using the search feature.
Okay, that's cool.
So if you really want to get rid of the Newsstand icon, but you still have to access some Newsstand items, then you can do it that way.
All right, that's cool.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so two things that I have absolutely fallen in love with, which I didn't expect that I would. The first one is the new notification system.
Oh, yeah.
I knew I would like it. I didn't realize that it would become my secret lover.
Uh-huh.
It's awesome. And then being able to take photos from the lock screen.
Oh, yeah.
That has turned out to be something that I'm doing all the time. I use my camera so much more now. And I used my camera a lot. But now it's just, it comes out and I'm taking photos all the time.
Yeah, I you know, my favorite thing about the Notification Center, and I think I've touched on this multiple other times, is the ability to change the way certain alerts come in.
Oh, yeah, that's awesome.
And to tell it if you want the app icon to be badged or if you want it to see the notification in your lock screen, if you want the thing in Notification Center at all, how many items you want in notification. It's just, it's great. How much.
I love the level of control we have.
Yeah, it's great. Now, going back to last week's show, we actually got a comment in from, Andrew.
I bet it's about the
stocks widget.
Yes. Which I ended up figuring out too. And I wrote a tip about it for Mac Observer.
Yeah. It's a good tip though. So basically if you don't want the stocks widget in your notification center on your iPhone, all you got to do, go into settings, go to notifications, and find stocks in your list of in notification center, and just turn off the switch that puts it in notification center. Boom.
It's amazingly simple.
Mm-hmm.
Yet it's one of those things that I couldn't find in Apple's documentation anywhere, which I thought was kind of odd. And then later on realized, no, it's actually not odd because Apple really likes controlling our user experience.
Yeah.
In a big way. So the fact that they put the stock widget in there and then didn't give us easy instructions on how to remove it, even though it's real easy, that seems very Apple.
My experience has kind of been that, for the most part, Apple doesn't do a whole lot of documentation on stuff like that.
No, they don't.
It's more up to you to kind of figure it out. I mean, there are so many. I mean, why would macOS 10 hints exist if Apple went to great lengths to document every single little bitty thing in the OS?
Oh, macOS 10 hints would still be around because the bottom line is people are lazy.
Yeah, that's true.
And I say that with love, everyone, but searching for content on Apple's website can be a bit daunting at times. And
certainly,
having other websites that are dedicated to just very specific types of things, like hints and tips, those places are probably a lot easier to search, which means that people will always be writing up the information, even if it's easily available on Apple's site, just because it's easier to find somewhere else.
Certainly. Okay, iPad user guide for iOS 5.0 software. Turns out there's a PDF available.
How about that?
I bet you knew about that. Wow, this is a long PDF too. Wow. Yep, nothing about stocks in there, though. All right. So one of my favorite new features of iOS 5, which is not available for most people, is iTunes Match, which I finally got to work. That was an incredible headache on my Mac to actually get going. So the process to get iTunes Match working first involves signing up and having a developer account. So you sign up with iTunes, you pay your $25, it's $25 a year. And then the next step is it goes and searches through your entire library in the same way that Lala did and tries to figure out what you have that Apple already has in the iTunes servers. And then it matches that stuff up and says, okay, this guy has these songs, and then everything that wasn't matched up, they upload it to Apple's servers. Now, this is still beta, and I really realized that when I was going through the process of actually matching my music, because I think it, for the most part, kept telling me I have 8,703 songs to go, zero remaining, or something like that. Something that didn't make sense. Like 8,000 songs matched, zero remaining, which it was really the opposite of that that was going on.
That's just awesome.
Yeah. And then it was taking up, I was sitting with a friend. He was, I think, trying to update his iPhone. He was at my house and he was saying, you know, this is really weird. It's going to take a long time. And I look over and it says 8 hours to download, iOS 5. And I thought that's really strange. And he was on a Windows computer. So I fiddled around and realized it was that way on all the computers. And then I stopped iTunes Match. And then suddenly we had all the internet in the world. So iTunes Match was doing something that it really wasn't giving a lot of feedback about. I'm guessing uploading a bunch of songs, but ultimately
probably.
I left it going for a while and finally it finished, which I wasn't entirely sure it was going to finish because it didn't seem like it was doing anything. And then the first thing that was available was I could access my iTunes library on any computer with iTunes, on which I could sign in with iTunes Match, which was very, very cool. You can just double click and a track will start playing, or you can click on the little download button and it'll download right from iTunes. Not only was the stuff that is in iTunes available, but also things that I know for sure are not in iTunes are available. So that's very nice. Now, for the last couple days, I've been trying to get it to work on my iPad because, well, that's really ultimately where I need it, is on my iOS devices. And it was not working. There's a little switch in the preferences for iTunes Match, and it just was not working. For whatever reason, it seemed like it was connected to nothing when I turned it on. Hmm. And however, today, and this just happened today, Apple has activated iTunes Match in settings for iOS 5. So actually, Jeff, if you go into settings and under music on whatever device you have on iOS 5, it actually has iTunes Match right in there. You can turn it on.
Yep, I see it now.
Mm-hmm.
Huh, okay. So maybe we're closer to iTunes Match coming out of beta.
Yeah, I think so. Like I said, it's pretty goofy.
You know, I'm not using it, and I don't know if I'm going to. And the bottom line for me is the way that I put music onto my iOS devices, it's all done with Smart Albums. So I always have this kind of changing mix of music on my different devices, just based on different smart folders I've created.
Hmm.
And I kind of like that because there's always surprises for me when I'm listening to music because I don't know what might be coming up next.
Yeah, you could be listening to some Hathaway, you could be listening to some Hall & Oates.
There you go.
Yeah.
And once you start using iTunes Match, you lose all of your Smart Albums.
Oh.
And now, you don't lose them out of iTunes, but they don't sync.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I haven't really played around too much with the playlist part, but I am very much, oh man, I'm so much enjoying, yeah, all these playlists that I have. So yeah, like you said, smart playlists are not synced over.
Now, for someone that really likes having granular control over exactly what music they have access to at any given time, I think the whole iTunes Match thing is going to be awesome. But for someone like me that likes to have more of this kind of organic thing happening where, not organic, passive. It's more of a passive thing.
Yeah.
And so I don't always know what music I have. iTunes Match just isn't a good option.
Yeah. Well, I mean, for me, as I've said before, it's amazing. I'm very much excited. To actually get a song started in iTunes Match, it takes, I'm going to say 5 seconds.
Well, oh, okay.
10. You might be right on 10. Okay, now this is started. Once it gets going, though, and I've seen varying amounts of time for starting a song, once it gets going, it will play through an album. You get gapless playback, no problem, because it's already started. It's been caching, and it's pre-caching the next track as well. And then it leaves the songs there that you've already played, so you can go back very quickly. And you can download ahead of time any songs that you want. And yeah, it's I like it. I'm excited. And it does seem like it's coming very soon. In fact, that's exactly what it says on its page in iTunes. It says coming soon. Yep.
Huh, how about that?
Yep. So, yeah, we should talk about, so iOS, the iPhone 4, the 4S rather, came out on Friday.
Right.
Did you hear about, have you heard about this, Jeff?
No.
Yeah. I got a chance to play with Siri a little bit at the Apple Store.
Okay, Siri rocks.
Siri's very cool. She's a very nice lady.
She's also my secret lover, and I don't even have an iPhone 4S.
Yeah, she's very charming. You can ask her to marry you.
I didn't even think to do that. But then again, that would have felt like rushing the relationship.
True. Yeah, I just told her that I love her.
Oh, that's so sweet. Mm-hmm. And did she just access your own credit card and send you like a box of chocolates?
I think that's what, yeah. I'm expecting that, yeah. Now, there were problems on launch day. So you didn't have an iPhone 4S. You didn't. Sorry, someone's calling me. You didn't buy an iPhone 4S. I was kind of hoping that Adam would be here so we could talk a little bit more about this, but there were issues with activating, as there have been for basically every single iPhone launch.
You know, of course there were. And I don't think the problems were as bad as they have been for previous launches, simply because we have AT&T that totally gets how this works, even though they still have problems. And then Verizon, this is their second iPhone. And so really, it was the first for Sprint. So with only one carrier having this as a first iPhone launch and having the problems we had, probably not too bad. And considering Apple...
Well, how bad were the problems, really? It was... Activation issues for a couple hours, right?
Yeah, and some people, instead of activating in seconds, it took a few minutes.
Oh, it wasn't a matter of hours?
I think there were some people, a very small handful of people, that were in the couple hour range. But for the most part, the delays people were experiencing were minutes.
Okay.
Like 10 minutes or less.
And it's not even a huge problem as it has been in the past, because now you activate over the air. You don't need to be hooked up to a computer. So it's not a mess where you have to have activation tables and people have to crowd around a laptop while iTunes is thinking about something for 20 minutes or something like that. You can just take your phone on your merry way, and whenever it activates.
Right. And some people that were concerned about activation times took their iPhones from the Apple Store into AT&T stores and had AT&T activate them.
Oh.
And so for those people, it was a matter of something was done in AT&T's computer system, and then they magically got an alert like 3 seconds later saying, yep, your phone's active.
Yeah. Now, interesting. There's been some speculation in terms of who was to blame for the activation issues. Now, was it all carriers? Did it seem like all carriers were having issues, or maybe only AT&T or Sprint?
I thought it was all carriers.
All carriers. Okay. Because there's speculation that it was actually on Apple's end. Which
I doubt that, because Apple doesn't handle the activation.
No, they do. They do. They handle a part of it. So you activate, yeah, right. You have AT&T or Sprint or what have you doing the legit new phone number, new phone activation situation. But then
okay,
Apple
yeah,
has
they are
to,
involved, you're right.
But then Apple has to say, hey, iPhone, it's cool now. Right. And then it unlocks or begins to be useful.
Sure. Okay, so you're right. Apple is involved at some level, but still, it wouldn't surprise me if the majority of the problems people were experiencing with activation,
I'm sure it was all
coming from the carriers.
It was probably all around. It was probably pretty intense.
Oh, sure. I mean, considering what 4 million phones sold over 3 days, okay, that's insane.
Wow.
And to be able to have a system that functions on any level with that type of load, not bad.
Yeah. It seems as though the iPhone 4S has fixed the death grip antenna issue that we talked so much about last year with the iPhone 4. Of course, that would be the situation where if you hold it a certain way, the signal strength goes down and almost goes away. Insanely Great Mac, various other outlets have tried out the iPhone 4S in comparison to the iPhone 4. Of course, the iPhone 4S has the dual antennas on it, which seemingly would solve this problem, and it does seem like it has solved the issue. Have you heard otherwise, Jeff?
From what I've heard, it sounds like overall people are getting much better reception with an iPhone 4S.
Awesome.
Yeah. And the fact that it can switch between the antennas and is just monitoring the call and how you're holding the phone, that's fantastic.
Yeah. iPhone 4S, of course, much faster than the iPhone 4. There have been some speed tests. There's one video in particular that I took a look at. It's in the show notes of comparison between the iPhone 4S and the iPhone 4. It seems as though, yes, in fact, of course, it's much faster. And by much faster, I mean it launches applications in like half a second faster and in some cases and maybe more depending on what kind of application. But generally speaking, it's certainly more zippy. It doesn't seem like the iPhone 4 is, oh, man, this is just incredible how much faster it is. But it's definitely more responsive. And for people who care about half seconds, 1 second in terms of switching between applications, bringing up new applications, doing things in apps, web browsing a little bit faster, it does look like a great improvement. And with my playing with an iPhone 4S in the Apple Store, I was pretty impressed at how quickly you can switch between applications.
You know, I'm impressed with the performance too. It's a noticeable improvement. It's not like going from, say, an Abacus to a supercomputer, but it's a noticeable improvement in performance.
It's like going from an iPhone 3G? Yeah, iPhone 3G to a 3GS.
Yeah, that was a very noticeable improvement, but it wasn't like hitting a turbo button.
Yeah, and honestly, I feel like maybe the iPhone 4S might be a little bit faster relative to the iPhone 4 if we're talking about the 3G, 3GS kind of comparison.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And here I'm saying, oh, yeah, as if I've had an iPhone 4S in my hand for days on end.
Right, neither of us have had an iPhone 4S.
That's awesome. We're totally critiquing a phone neither of us own.
I played with it for several minutes in an Apple Store once, twice, actually. You know, the first time I saw it in the Apple store, it was very noisy and I couldn't really use Siri that well. I went to the North Michigan Avenue Apple store in Chicago for the second time that I played with it. It was still quite noisy in there, of course, because it is the like the Midwest flagship store. But Siri had no problem knowing what I'm talking about in that store with all the commotion.
I was impressed with how well Siri was able to parse out what I was saying on launch day. I was in the Flatiron Crossing Apple store in Broomfield, and that place was packed. It was like a party in there. I mean, it was crazy, and it was loud. And Siri was able to sort out what I was saying, even though I couldn't clearly hear Siri's responses back to me. But everything I said, Siri was able to pick up and parse correctly.
Yeah. Yeah, that's pretty cool. I still want to see how well it'll do. If you look at the one of the videos, or maybe both of the Siri videos on Apple's site, they open with a guy out running, talking to Siri, and I'm thinking, I won't believe it until I see it. Because if you're out running, you're going up and down, and the microphone's flopping around, and you're a little winded, and there's wind blowing past you, and all of these things, I'm not entirely convinced that it'll work that well, but we will see.
I'm betting, based on my experience in the Flatiron store, that it will work unless you're running, say, like on a sidewalk on a busy street where there's tons of traffic.
Yeah, it does seem, I'm confident. After using it in the Apple store, I'm definitely confident, but I will have to have a good microphone. I'm not sure it'll work so well with the Bluetooth headphones that I have.
I'm going to go out on a limb here and say that with the Bluetooth microphone you have, it's going to suck ass. It's going to be horrible and it will not work at all.
Speaking as someone who's heard me on the other
one. Matter of fact, I think Siri will go so far as to automatically dial 911 and call for an ambulance, assuming you've had a stroke.
Yeah. And ask me to smile.
Right.
Yeah. What else do we have here? So I guess Sprint iPhone users have been complaining about slow 3G data speeds.
Now, okay, so I haven't looked into that much. Are they complaining about slow 3G data speeds compared to other phones on the same network or just in general?
I believe they have looked at their own phones. They've looked at other Sprint phones.
Okay.
In comparison to this and it's not huge. The number of people who are complaining about this, but it's certainly a large number of people complaining about, in certain cases they look at their previous Sprint phone and they say it's much faster here. And then they do a speed test on their iPhone and it's much slower. We're talking pings of like 1194, download of like 0.16 megabits, uploads of 0.05.
Okay.
Like now, almost impossible to use kind of speed.
That's bad. Yeah. All right. Now, of course, CDMA, which is what Sprint uses, offers slower data speeds, relatively speaking, compared to what you can get from GSM.
Sure. But not that slow.
Yeah, not that slow. And then, so on Verizon is intercepting your data and doing their own compression on it and feeding you compressed web pages. So Verizon is creating an illusion of better performance by essentially really screwing up all the content you're getting.
That's nice.
Yeah. No, actually, it sucks. And I don't know if Sprint is doing anything to try and optimize data speeds, but if that's the kind of ping you're getting, holy crap, that's really bad.
Yeah. It is very bad. Now, on the flip side, though, AT&T users are seeing significantly improved data speeds. And of course, we were informed when the iPhone 4S was announced that it does have the ability to download at 14.4 megabits per second on the HSDPA.
Oh, I don't remember.
I think it's around there, something like that. And people are seeing much better speed on AT&T. Looking at some screenshots, 147 millisecond ping, which is not bad. I can't remember what it even is in terms of ping on my phone. I'll run a speed test on mine as I'm talking about this. But download speeds, we're looking at 5.45 megabits per second down, 7.71. Upload speeds, 1.70, which aren't actually, I feel like I've seen higher upload speeds even on my iPhone 4. But the download speeds are certainly faster.
Well, okay, faster download speeds, especially on an iOS device, that's far more important to me than the performance of my upload speeds.
Well, you need to have some upload capacity to make your requests and stuff, but...
Sure, but the amount of data you're sending for a request is negligible in comparison to what you're going to get for your download.
Sure. Yeah, okay, so I'm looking at 140 ping, 3.26 megabit down, and about 1.08 up on my iPhone 4 over 3G, which these look like pretty reasonable speeds, what I would see on a good day.
Okay.
These are definitely improvements in these screenshots.
Nice. I started to run a speed test on mine, and right then I got a couple texts coming in and an email.
Naturally.
So
as soon as I started it's generally when I start the podcast, I get like 5 phone calls from my mom.
Yeah, that sounds about right. Yeah.
So we were talking last week about Sprint and whether or not they were going to sell the iPhone 4S unlocked. Initially, we thought that it would be sold unlocked right from the get-go. Verizon would be...
In retrospect?
Yeah.
That was a really stupid speculation on my part.
What was your speculation? That no, of course not? Or
well, no, that they might, and then later on I thought, no, that's really stupid. Why in the world would these carriers do that? That's so not how they work.
Right. Well, okay, so Verizon, the way they do it, and I don't think AT&T is going to do the same thing.
I think Verizon is alone in the way they're going to handle the unlocking.
Okay, so the way they do it is you buy it locked, and then after 60 days, if your account is in good standing, they will unlock it for CDMA, or GSM rather. So you can, the SIM card tray will be unlocked, as they've done for any other world phone. Now, Sprint, of course, like I said, they...
Sprint is just saying no.
Well, now they're saying... They've issued more clarification to Macworld, and they said that the Sprint iPhone 4S does ship unlocked with the micro SIM unlocked. However, they're going to be locking it shortly after launch via an update. and then
is this where I can break our explicit rule?
Hang on.
All right.
However, after the slot has been locked, Sprint says that it will allow customers in good standing to unlock the SIM for international use in the future.
Now can I jump across our explicit tag? That's a big bucket of bullshit.
Really?
What kind of crap-ass company gives you a phone that you can use with multiple carriers when you're traveling internationally, then shuts off the feature after the phone ships so that they can decide later on whether or not you can have the feature back? Sprint, you suck ass.
Well, and I get the feeling that this isn't going to be the last we're hearing about this.
Yeah, you know, Sprint has handled this whole thing with unlock features horribly from the get-go.
Yeah, very cavalier attitude about everything, and they're getting a very fancy phone.
Yeah, and customers are getting a very fancy up-the-butt thing from Sprint.
Now,
I am not pleased with the way Sprint has handled the information about whether or not the phone's locked or unlocked.
I think they'll get it figured out soon. The customers are definitely going to.
Oh, they'll get it figured out.
Yeah.
But in the meantime, I'll just bitch and moan and then bitch and moan some more.
Well, here's something to be happy about. Off contract AT&T iPhone 4S's, they come unlocked.
Which is exactly what I expected.
Now, I think this is probably what one would expect in the previous years, too, if you bought a completely unsubsidized iPhone from AT&T, although it hasn't been this way. So,
but if you bought the unsubsidized phone from Apple, meaning the iPhone 4,
right,
it came unlocked.
Yes. And so right now, while you cannot get the unlocked, unsubsidized iPhone 4S from Apple, I think it's going to be next month. If you go to the AT&T store and they say you're not eligible for anything, you got to pay us full price, $649, $749, or $849 for the 16, 32, or 64 gig models. It'll be unlocked. You'll be on AT&T, but it'll also be unlocked so you can swap out the SIM card whenever you want.
So, okay, so that's cool.
It is very cool.
Yeah.
Now, under not very cool, the iPhone 4S battery, we talked a little bit about that. I was looking at some data on the on Apple's page before it was launched, and it's been confirmed that the iPhone 4S's battery is, I would say, generally worse than the iPhone 4.
You know, I'd really like to play with an iPhone 4S for an extended period to figure out if this is a battery issue or if this is an issue with features that we have on the iPhone 4S. So I'm basing this on the fact that the tests that I've been doing with the Reminders app, when I have that running and I have, and I'm using the geofencing feature, my battery performance on my iPhone 4 goes way down.
I'd imagine so. It's got to figure out where you are.
Exactly. And so I'm wondering how much of the battery performance issues we're seeing with the iPhone 4S are related to software-based features.
Well, I feel like we'll probably have a software update coming out. Probably, I would say the first one that we see is going to say, hey, this is to resolve battery life issues.
I'd be okay with that.
Now, okay, so over 3G data, or using 3G data on an iPhone 4S, Wi-Fi data, and video recording, and also doing audio and video playback on the iPhone 4S is less to less and greater extents relative to the iPhone 4. Voice and FaceTime seem to be the only ones, the only things you can do that you'll get maybe a little bit more juice out of the iPhone 4S than the iPhone 4.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think less standby time and stuff like that too. There's a really nice breakdown on iLounge's review. If you want to check that out, we'll put that in the show notes.
Oh, cool.
But there have been some users who've been experiencing like crazy significant battery issues. And I believe even Dave Hamilton is one of those people.
Yeah, Dave has been having some battery issues. Yeah. Now, to be fair, the battery issues people are experiencing right now, how many of those are related to people just hammering on features because they're so excited to play with things and test them out? And how many of them are related to Apple needing to tweak software so that they get better performance out of the apps? And I'm not saying that in Apple's defense. I'm just curious.
Yeah, I'm sure there's a certain amount of that. Then again, it does seem like people like Dave. Dave's pretty smart. He knows what he's doing.
Oh, yeah. Dave's a very smart guy.
Did you see that the iPhone 4S has new GPS abilities?
Yes, the Russian satellites.
Yeah, the GLONASS. GPS system, or I guess it's called GLONASS instead of GPS, which is, do you know what that stands for?
GPS in Russian?
No, I don't think so. Actually, you know what? You're right. It is technically, okay, it is a Russian acronym. So we'll just go with GLONASS.
Okay.
And it is global. So the iPhone 4S can take advantage of it, presumably.
Which, okay, that makes sense because we're the GPS satellites, and I'm using that term generically. Where the GPS satellites sit, you should be able to go pretty much anywhere in the world and get a signal. And adding in Russia's satellites, that's awesome because that increases the likelihood that you'll be able to get at least 3 satellites at any time. And for good, accurate triangulation on your position, you need to have at least 3 satellites.
Yeah. Oh, you're talking good or at all?
Good, because you can do, a GPS position acquisition from a single satellite.
Oh, cool. I didn't know that.
It takes a lot longer because what has to happen is that your GPS is continually getting a signal from the single satellite, and then based on movement, it can figure out where you are.
Your movement or its movement?
Your movement.
Do the GPS satellites move relative to the Earth's rotation?
That's a good question. Some of them might. I believe most of them are geosynchronous.
Okay. Or geostationary. I can't remember.
Geostationary.
Yeah. So what wouldn't geostationary mean that they're let's not get into
this. Okay, so if it's geostationary, the satellite is going to be sitting at the same point in relation to the surface of the Earth all the time. Geostationary satellites also tend to be at a farther or at a higher altitude.
Yeah, they'd have to be.
Right.
Now, what about geosynchronous?
Well, I just lost 2 nerd cred points right there, didn't I?
I mean, I don't have them either, so. That's all right.
So I would assume that geosynchronous means that the satellite is moving at the same speed relative to Earth based on its altitude, which wouldn't necessarily mean geostationary.
Hmm. Okay, we'll go with that.
And whichever knows exactly how it works. Thank you for giving us clarification.
Yeah. So here's what I'm going to say. If Skip is listening to this, my buddy Rocket Skip, call us and tell us the difference. 202-642-6667. Or if you're someone else who is smart and knows the difference between those types of orbits, call us. Let us know. Leave us a voice message. You can email us feedback@wehavecommunicators.com. So, last two stories are interesting ones, and I'm not sure how I feel about them, but I think they're interesting. So, CNET reports that they have heard from 2 different sources. Well, one from analyst Ashok Kumar at Rodman & Renshaw. He claims that Steve Jobs was intimately involved with the next iPhone from concept to final design, and that he was not that involved with the iPhone 4S because his time was limited, as he said, or rather that another CNET source said that. In addition to that, I believe, yeah, today there was a video that was posted on PC Mag that... CEO of SoftBank was being interviewed. He talked about how on the day that the iPhone 4S was announced, he was sitting in a meeting with Tim Cook, and Tim got an email from Steve or a phone call from Steve. And he said, Tim said, "I have to leave. I have to cut this meeting short. I have to go talk with my boss about." An upcoming product or something like that.
About Apple's next product.
Correct, yeah. And there's speculation that this could be about the next iPhone. Of course, it could be about any number of things.
Okay, thank you for saying that, because the conclusion that PC Mag jumped to and most other people jumped to was that the phone call was about the next iPhone.
Yeah.
Okay, so to assume that with the iPhone 4S launching with the next week from in relation to when that phone call happened, and that Apple's next product is the iPhone 4S, how can someone actually make that jump through logic? It doesn't work, because there are new iMacs coming, there are new MacBook Pros coming, there might be a new Mac Pro coming.
New iPad,
maybe new displays, maybe a different input device.
Many things.
Maybe another Apple TV. How about a new Airport Extreme base station? I mean, there's so many things that can happen between now and when the next iPhone launches, which is not going to be in spring and it's not going to be in summer. If Apple does a new iPhone next year, it's going to be probably around this time. So there's at least 12 months between iPhone launches.
Right. So it could be about many things. And it could
yes.
be at
and it's
about,
most certainly not about the iPhone 5.
Right. But what is
and with
interesting...
with that, Apple will release the iPhone 5 in time for Christmas just to spite me.
Yeah. Yeah. But what is mostly interesting about this is the fact that Steve appeared to be... still engaged in whatever the next products Apple was has in the pipeline, basically up until the day before he died, maybe even the day.
Yeah, well, the day before he died.
Well, certainly the day before. This is the day before.
Yeah, because this was an iPhone 4S announcement day.
Yes.
And the death certificate says that he died in the afternoon the following day.
Right.
So, yeah. All right. So, yeah. So the important takeaway from this is that even on his deathbed, Steve Jobs was still actively involved with Apple's product designs. He was so passionate about what he was doing that as he was dying, quite literally, he was still on the phone with Tim Cook talking about product ideas.
Man, way to make me feel like I'm all accomplished. I don't know that I'd be on my deathbed talking about the next thing.
Well, you might be on your deathbed talking about the thing that you're most passionate about in your world.
That's true.
And I believe that's exactly what Steve was doing.
Yeah. So it's very nice. A very cool story, I think.
Yeah, it's a very cool story.
Now, follow-up to that, actually, the Steve Jobs Memorial... the party at One Infinite Loop happened today.
Right.
Norah Jones and Coldplay were there, which is very cool.
That's very cool.
Tim Cook said some words. All the Apple employees were invited to come celebrate Steve's life. There are a lot of really nice photos of him hung up outside in the... what do you call that? The open space in between the in the buildings in the inner part.
Oh, where they used to have the Icon Garden.
Is that where they? I thought they had that on the outside of it.
I thought that was in the courtyard between the buildings.
Okay, but yeah, the courtyard there, and there's actually an aerial view aerial footage, filmed by CNET. It's very neat. There's no sound, but it's just great to see that area. Have you been in there before, Jeff?
I haven't been in the courtyard area. I've been in the One Infinite Loop buildings before, but not out in the courtyard.
Yeah, the courtyard's pretty cool. You should, if you haven't yet, anybody, if you ever had the chance, go have lunch at Cafe Max, because it's really good food. All right, so with that, let's go to our iDevice picks. Jeff, do you have a pick this week?
I do, and I'm actually deciding between a couple. So hold on. I have to look at the other one real quick. And okay. I'm actually going to go with a pick for kids today.
Okay. Hopefully kids don't listen to this show.
Yeah, but people that have gotten drunk and now have kids... they're listening to the show.
Oh, okay. So that's where babies come from?
Yep, babies come from alcohol.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
That makes a lot of sense, actually.
Yeah. Okay, so my pick this week is Grover's book. It's actually an application version of the monster at the end of the book from Sesame Street. And I ended up getting to play with this the other day, and I thought, holy crap, you know, if you have little kids, this is like the coolest way to do Monster at the End of the Book, which it's a book that's been around for kids for a really long time. And it's just a simple little book, but the way they did it as an application I thought was fantastic, because the kids can actually interact with Grover, and it's all animated really well, and it even has information for parents, like ideas to engage their kids so that you can ask them questions that will get the kids thinking more about the book, about reading, and there you go. So talk about a pick that is so completely out of my normal world.
So which one, the monster at the end of the book, is that the pick?
Monster at the end of the book.
Got it.
And I think I called it Grover's book because that's probably what I called it when I was younger.
And it's $4, right?
That sounds right.
Cool. Well, yeah, $3.99. All right. So my pick this week is a free one if you have Netflix streaming. It's How the Universe Works.
Oh, my God. That's an awesome pick.
Yeah. It's a feast for the eyes. You know, when I first looked at it before I started watching an episode, I noticed that Mike Rowe is the narrator, and I thought, oh, why would they get Mike Rowe? He's a nice guy, class act. I think he's great at the dirty jobs and stuff like that. But he's not really a space or physics or anything kind of related to that sort of guy. But he does a great job. And honestly, the program overall is, I was a little concerned at the very beginning. I watched the first episode, Big Bang. I was concerned that it might be a little too light, or that it might be just for people who don't understand basic stuff, and it'll take just the entire time to explain the basic ideas. But there's a lot. I mean, of course, they do set it up so you can sit down with anybody who isn't too familiar with how the Big Bang worked or anything like that. And they bring you up to speed pretty quickly within the first 10, 15 minutes. But then the rest of the 43 minutes is very compelling, interesting stuff, and very, very pretty. The graphics are fantastic in this.
I didn't realize that was available on Netflix now.
Oh, have you seen this on Discovery?
I saw the, I think it was the first episode, the Big Bang one.
Yeah.
And then I wasn't able to get to see any other.
Well, it's available in HD on Netflix streaming.
Oh, I'm totally adding it to my queue tonight. And it doesn't surprise me that they got Mike Rowe to do this, because he has a great voice.
Oh,
so,
yeah.
So awesome for voiceovers. And here's a bit of trivia for you. Most people don't realize he was a Shakespearean trained actor.
Oh.
So this whole dirty jobs gig that he has, which works really well for him, and he's an awesome sport because he'll do pretty much anything. Yeah, that is so outside what his world was before he got that gig.
Yeah, cool. Yeah, totally love it. How the Universe Works, check it out. Of course, you can find all of our iPhone picks and the show notes at wehavecommunicators.com. You can review the show in iTunes or rate it with the little stars. Send us feedback at wehavecommunicators.com. That's the email address. Advertising is handled by Backbeat Media at backbeatmedia.com, and we thank them so much for that. Those guys are awesome. Jeff Gamet, you are at the Mac Observer, macobserver.com. Is that right?
Let me think. Yes.
Yes. You're also on Twitter. At Jay Gamet is your Twitter handle. Zazzle.com/Jay Gamet is where you can find Jeff's Zazzle store. many drawings on various items, such as hats and shirts and mugs. You get the We Have Communicators coffee mug right there. Or you can get it in a beer stein or a frosted beer mug so you can drink some libations.
Can you imagine how awesome beer would taste in that mug?
I can only imagine because I don't have one. Maybe I should.
Maybe you should.
Yeah. Of course, you can find me on Twitter. I'm at Michael Johnston. I'm also at Lil Reviews. The at Michael Johnston one is where I tweet as me, and the other one is where I tweet as someone who has a head crab on him, and he's also doing reviews of various things on Twitter. So that's L-I-L Reviews. You have anything else to say, Jeff?
You know, it's kind of weird not having Adam on this week. Kind of miss him, but I think we might have pulled the show off anyhow.
I think so. I think we did it. As long as it's recording, we did it.
That's good because I'm not running a backup for you.
Yep.
That's always Adam's job.
Yeah,
because
he's good at that.
He's reliable.
Mm-hmm. Except for this week.
Yeah, but you know, I'm going to let him slide because him being gone this week means that things ultimately will go smoother for me down the road. Because yes. He's so awesome with all the tech stuff that he does.
Mm-hmm. All right. And so with that, we will see you next time on We Have Communicators.
An iPod. An iPod. A phone.
Well, Scott, we don't want to squelch your opinions. If you have something you want to say about an issue of the day, but does it have to be about intercourse with a dead woman?
Can I ask you a question, Mr. Leghorn?
ask away.
Have you ever been tempted?
I've been tempted. I'm a fancy corporate lawyer. I'm a fancy corporate lawyer who might be a chicken. This is unusual.
No, it's all good.
And then I stole her opera glasses.
You know, sometimes I get on a Skype call with one of my other friends and I play an episode of You Look Nice Today into the microphone and pretend like I'm having a conversation with them.
No. Yuck. No. Yuck. Yuck. No. 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 You have to get them and put them away and you lose them. Nobody wants a stylus. So let's not use a stylus. Nobody wants a stylus. So let's not use a stylus. We're going to use the best pointing device in the world. We're going to use a pointing device that we're all born with. We're born with 10 of them. We're going to use our fingers.